From WKAR's Studio S at Michigan State University, this is Current Sports.
Yo, 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 what is up, beautiful people? It is Friday, June 26, 2015. You have made it. The weekend is here. Can you believe that, folks? Oh, boy, time flies when you're having fun, and we have been having a ton of fun throughout this entire week here on WKAR AM 870. So glad you are closing out your week by listening to us. Welcome to the show. As always, I am your host, Al Martin. We have a lot to talk about. Of course, last night, the NBA draft. We'll give you our top NBA draft takeaways. Of course, with the Detroit Pistons having the number 8 pick in the draft, they decided to draft a pretty talented guy out of Arizona by the name of Stanley Johnson. And hey, a Spartan also got drafted in the second round. How about BJ? That's right. Brandon Dawson was taken by the Pelicans. Of course, that pick was traded to the Los Angeles Clippers. We'll discuss that move and Brandon Dawson's future in the NBA. We'll also talk a bit of the Tigers as they fell to the Chicago White Sox last night. And also, a Flashback Friday interview for you guys. Sally Nogle, as she has been donned with a pretty cool honor that you do not want to miss, folks. We'll have all of that, as well as take your calls all the way up until 2 p.m., 517-355-9527, 517-355-9527. But hey, let's start this party like we always do. Here are your current sports quick hit headliners for this June 26th. All right, first, let's start with the NBA draft. The Detroit Pistons took Arizona Stanley Johnson, a 19-year-old kid, 6'6", small forward, who stayed at Arizona for 1 year. Pistons head coach Stan Van Gundy had this to say about the kid. Quote, "This guy is a winner. He's got incredible toughness and really gets after it on the defensive end. For our fans that go back to the Bad Boys era, this is their guy." Johnson averaged 13.8 points and 6.5 rebounds his freshman campaign with Arizona. He shot 39% on three-pointers. The Pistons went with a 6'6 player in the second round, this time picking Darren Hilliard, a scoring guard from Villanova. Now, Hilliard averaged 14.3 points as a senior, shot 38.7% from three-point land, and was a first-team All-Big East performer. You'll get my thoughts on that Pistons draft pick in just a sec. Brandon Dawson, a 4-year standout at Michigan State, went number 56 overall in the second round to the New Orleans Pelicans, then was quickly traded to the LA Clippers for cash considerations. The Orange County Register reported that the cost was about $600,000. LA is one of 11 teams Dawson worked out for before the draft. All right, Michigan's 2016 recruiting class in the world of football grew to 19 on Thursday, as four-star defensive end Ron Johnson announced his commitment via Twitter. The 6'3", 221-pound player from Camden, New Jersey, is ranked as the number 6 weak side defensive end in the nation and number 5 player in his state, according to Rivals.com. And how about this award, huh? Add the Tim Caron Award to the long list of recognition for Michigan State athletic trainer Sally Nogle. Nogle received the award given to one individual each year for outstanding service as an athletic trainer on Thursday in St. Louis at the National Athletic Trainers Association's National Convention. Now, it has been awarded in the name of Caron, the late longtime University of Tennessee trainer. Since 1994, Caron died suddenly from an aortic aneurysm in 1992. We'll have a Flashback Friday chat with Sally in just a sec that you do not want to miss. Former Michigan State track and field All-American Leah O'Connor qualified for the finals of the 3,000-meter steeplechase at the USATF Outdoor Track and Field Championships with a fourth-place finish in the preliminary round Thursday in Eugene, Oregon, at historic Hayward Field. O'Connor finished second in her heat with a time of 9:41:16. Congrats to Leah O'Connor. She is fantastic. All right, Will Golston, former Michigan State defensive end and Detroit Southeastern graduate, now player for the Tampa Bay Buccaneers in the NFL, will be holding his first youth camp from 1 to 4 p.m. on Saturday at Detroit Mumford High School. He will give 200 kids ages 8 to 15 years old a chance to learn football techniques from various counselors, including fellow Michigan State products Denicos Allen, Mylon Hicks, Tony Lippitt, and Makaija Reynolds. All right, the Lansing Lugnuts mounted a heart-pounding last-ditch rally before falling, unfortunately, 6-5 to open the second half against the West Michigan Whitecaps Thursday at Cooley Law School Stadium. Lansing continues its series against West Michigan with a flat-screen Friday and post-game laugh cue fireworks on the mound. Starlin Terrell gets the start against Artie Litwick. First pitch is scheduled for 7:05 p.m. with gates opening an hour earlier. And Starlin actually has a 5-3 record and is pitching with an ERA of 2.60. And we close things out with the Detroit Tigers. Carlos Sanchez's base-clearing triple in the 10th inning was just enough to propel the Chicago White Sox to an 8-7 win over the Tigers on Thursday afternoon at Comerica Park. Detroit's bullpen had shut down Chicago until Jabba Chamberlain entered for his 10th frame, in a 5-5 tie game. The right-hander walked Melky Cabrera, hit Ivysael Garcia, and allowed an infield single to pinch hitter J.B. Shuck before Sanchez delivered the game-winning drive down the right field line. You got to be kidding me, Jabba. Well, that wraps up your current sports quick hit headliners. Our phone lines are open. Call 517-355-9527, 517-355-9527 to be a part of the discussion. Looking at my watch here, yeah, I think it's about that time to start the show.
Johnson from the University of Arizona, Frank Kaminsky, Justice Winslow, Miles Turner, the University of Texas, Trey Lyles, Devin Booker, Cameron Payne, Kelly Oubre, Terry Rozier, Rashad Vaughn, Sam Decker from the University of Wisconsin, Jaron Grant, DeLon Wright, Justin Anderson, Bobby Portis, Rondé Hollis Jefferson, Tyus Jones from Duke University, Jarrell Martin, Nikola Milutinov from Novi Sad, Serbia, Larry Nance Jr., RJ Hunter, Chris McCullough from Syracuse University. With the 30th pick in the 2015 NBA Draft, the Golden State Warriors select Kevon Looney from UCLA.
Yes, and that is how we start today's current sports. Welcome to the show. I am your host, Al Martin, always have been. What a night it was. What a night it was. I mean, I can only imagine how it is to be sitting there in your best suit, you know, with your tie on, looking mighty fly, and just sitting there watching Commissioner Adam Silver of the NBA walk up to that podium and say your name along with an NBA team. That's unbelievable. Unbelievable stuff. I mean, it gives me goosebumps every single year when I watch the NBA draft because, as I stated yesterday, I used to be one of those kids, right, dreaming of that moment. But first off, congratulations to everyone picked yesterday. It was a draft that And you know what? You know, and if you tuned in yesterday, Isaac and I, our engineer of WKR's Current Sports, who's going to chat with me in just a sec, Isaac and I, of course, we held our mock draft yesterday, right? An annual thing we do here on the show. And I'm sitting there watching this whole thing, and I counted. I don't know how many Isaac got, right? But I counted. There was one point, you know, like when the first round was set and done after Golden State got done picking, I went back and like, you know, looked at my list and compared it to what actually happened. I got like 3 picks right out of the top 20, which is, that's sad. That's sad, okay? And it just shows you how unpredictable the NBA draft is, folks. You just never know what's going to happen. Teams do things that you just don't expect. So, it, you know, my motto for the NBA draft is to expect the unexpected. Now, I got a few quarrels to get off my chest. Just two quarrels to get off my chest when it comes to this year's NBA draft and what teams partook in and who they decided to draft, which I'm going to get to in just a sec. First off, to invite to this conversation now our fantastic engineer of the show, Isaac Constance. How you doing, my man? Happy Friday.
Doing well, Al. Loved the draft yesterday. Was very excited for a moment and then very bummed the next. And we'll talk about that moment a little bit later. Hint, I'm a Pelicans fan. But anyway, no, I always love watching the draft. And you talk about counting the picks you got, right? My mock draft was way off. Mm-hmm. I didn't even count. I don't plan to count. I will not count. But it was fun. I loved the draft every year.
Yeah, I definitely. Exactly. And, you know, we had something on the line, so I think we have to go back and count when we get some time. But I didn't even bother last night. I did at one point. I think it was like my magic number was 3. So if you can beat 3, which isn't hard to beat, hey, hats off to you. You get double lunch from me, Isaac. But let's start off, man. Let's kind of go in order here and really just voice if we have a concern or not with the picks. Now, the first overall pick of this year's NBA draft was a no-brainer. Karl Anthony Towns is going to be a star. Point blank, period. That's not breaking news, folks. No-brainer. He has the potential to be an NBA All-Star in his first year. You know, I think he's going to be, he's my choice for Rookie of the Year. Maybe D'Angelo Russell can give him a run for his money. Maybe Jahlil Okafor can also give him a run for his money. But his size, I mean, he has great handle for a big man. He has a nice shot as well. That shot can develop over time. He can develop that into a knockdown shooter over time. I think that he'll make the most immediate impact on both sides of the basketball, particularly on the defensive end. He's that good. He's a great shot blocker as well. The Minnesota Timberwolves, Flip Saunders and company, they made the right decision here. I don't know if there's anybody that you could have taken at number one other than Karl Anthony Towns. So to me, that was a no-brainer. And Isaac, I think you agree, because we also, both of us, when we had our draft yesterday, we both chose and predicted that Karl Anthony Towns would be numero uno. Then it got interesting. The Los Angeles Lakers with the number 2 overall pick. I thought that they were going to go with Jahlil Okafor. That was my guy. That's who I thought the LA Lakers were going to draft last night. But I tell you what, Isaac, I was not surprised that they went a different route and decided to go with Ohio State's D'Angelo Russell. I love the kid. I think, you know, and it really, when the pick happened, you could really almost hear everyone say and sort of allude to what the Knicks are thinking with this pick. Of course, with Kobe Bean Bryant, one of the greatest players to ever play, with him being on the back end of his career, we all know Kobe is going to be hanging up the sneaks relatively soon here. I don't think next year, maybe the year after next. If he doesn't stay healthy next year, oh yeah, he's done. He's got to hang up the sneaks, I think. But when knowing that, if you're a Lakers general manager here, if you're Mitch Kupchak in this situation, you're preparing for that move to happen. D'Angelo Russell is a kid. Isaac, I got a chance to cover a few games, you know, last year and actually see this kid in person. Oh, my God. Especially being at the Big Ten tournament out in Chicago, covering that for Current Sports TV. I'm sitting there watching this kid, and his instincts and his court vision, he's got a great shot. He is just an overall fantastic player. They were preparing. They are preparing for when Kobe says, hey, I'm done. I'm announcing my retirement. They're hoping that D'Angelo Russell is going to be that guy who can really just ease on into that role And first, and I want to pump the brakes here because I saw a lot of things out there. And I actually put it on, you know, those who are friends with me on Facebook, I put it on my Facebook page. It was just so frustrating watching, you know, individuals who are diehard Laker fans just go out and, you know, I'm seeing on Twitter left and right, oh, yeah, he's going to be the next Kobe Bryant. He's going to be unbelievable, blah, blah, blah. Can we pump the brakes on the expectations of these kids as well? Give this kid a chance to even play a game or even step onto the surface out in L.A. before we start dining him as the next Kobe Bryant. The kid is going to be good. Very, very good. And it helps the fact that, you know, he's going to come into a situation where Kobe Bryant, you know, he gets to learn from one of the best ever, you know, the best to ever do it. That's, I really like this move at the end of the day, Isaac. And I think at the end of the day, also with this move, they are hoping to add a big man during the free agency period. They're going to go after some kind of big fish here because they didn't do it with that second pick.
Well, and that's why I think changed their mind, because early in this week, there were all the rumors of Jahlil Okafor going to the Lakers. And then as Friday neared, we started to hear mumblings about D'Angelo Russell. And the thing that I think, like, definitely locked them in on D'Angelo Russell was Kevin Love declaring for free agency, because they've got a great shot at Love. Love went to UCLA when his contract was out. He was rumored to be looking at the Lakers. And then LaMarcus Aldridge also has piqued interest in the Lakers as well. So, no, I think, like you said, a lot of big men on the market this year. Also, DeAndre Jordan, Tyson Chandler, tons of big men had in the market, not quite as many point guards. So it made sense for them to go with D'Angelo Russell. And hey, the kid averaged the most points per game for any freshman in the whole nation. But his main skill is his passing, arguably. So the kid's got a bright future. I think he's going to be great. Has potential to be one of the best players in the draft. And yeah, I don't think the Lakers will look back and regret this pick.
Going to be a star. I really like him a lot. I think he's going to be a bona fide star in the league. Well, number three now. So the obvious choice here for the Philadelphia 76ers was, of course, Jahlil Okafor. I mean, Jahlil Okafor is a guy. The only knock I have on Jahlil is that he needs to improve defensively. But at the end of the day, he's got the fundamentals. He's got a soft touch around the basket that makes him a stud, you know, and the player that you can't pass up on. So I think that was pretty obvious with the number three pick. And then it got really interesting for me, Isaac. Well, and I got to voice my concern on this. Now, and I think you have it uploaded, I believe.
I do.
Because after the draft was set and done, of course, with the number four overall pick, the New York Knicks, a franchise that has been so downtrodden for so long, folks. And it hurts to watch the Knicks just go through, you know, this period every single year. The Knicks that has, you know, that just New York in general that has such a storied history with the game of basketball. I mean, you expect the Knicks to be good. They have that aura surrounded around them. So what does Phil Jackson decide to do with this pick? He decides to draft, with Justice Winslow still on the table, he decides to go with Kristaps Porzingis, power forward from Latvia. And it was so comical, man. It was so comical. After the broadcast was said and done, Isaac, I ESPN SportsCenter comes on, and Stephen A. Smith, you know, everybody knows Stephen A. Smith, right? Longtime broadcaster and analyst for ESPN, basketball, you know, guru, quote unquote. He goes completely off. I don't know if you guys heard this, but I want to play a little bit of it here. Here we go.
Stephen A. Smith joins us now. Stephen A., I'm going to ask you very calmly to explain to me what in the good name of Frederick Weiss Phil Jackson did tonight.
Well, first of all, it beats me. Let me be very, very clear. I'm very confused at this pick simply because when I think about Phil Jackson, he made promises that he's simply not keeping. And if I seem a bit agitated, yes, it would happen to be because I'm on vacation and I came off vacation just to talk about this subject, because as a native New Yorker, I'm completely disgusted. When I look at this kid, Porzingis, let me be very, very clear about this kid, Porzingis, okay? The kid is talented. He knows how to spread the floor. He's 7'1". He's 220. He can put the ball on the floor. He can spread it. He can shoot from the perimeter. He's got tremendous talent. And in 3 to 5 years, he may very well be big time. But, gentlemen, this is not about that. This is about now. Because when you look at the fact that Phil Jackson picked this individual, you're talking about a project. Phil Jackson in the New York Knicks passed up on at least four dudes who are NBA ready now. You got Willie Cauley-Stein. You passed up on him. You got Justice Winslow, who I think is a steal in the draft. You passed up on him, okay? Stanley Roberts out of Arizona. You passed up on him. That's just to name a few. And why did you do this? You did this because of some dude who may or may not be ready in 2 years. A year after you paid Carmelo Anthony $124 million, told the city of New York you were going to be respectable, you were going to contend for a playoff spot within the Eastern Conference, then has the temerity, the unmitigated gall, the disgusting proclamation that you did a great job because you cleaned up the house by tanking the season. And oh, by the way, when you tank the season, you didn't even do that right, because two of your last three games at Atlanta, at Orlando, you lost those two, basically giving more ping pong balls to the Minnesota Timberwolves, who ended up with the number one overall pick in the NBA draft. New York Knicks fans were at the Barclays Center booing because we recognize that we have been hoodwinked, bamboozled, led astray, run amok, and flat out deceived by Phil Jackson and the New York Knicks. That is the situation. That is what is going on, and that is why I stand here on my vacation, blissfully happy until tonight when this happened. Ruined everything. Just ruined it.
Stephen A. worked up. Fran Fraschilla called him hungry. Jay Billis astutely pointed out he better be hungry. He needs to put on quite a bit of weight.
Oh, man. Did Stephen A. just not lose his mind or what? I think he just had an aneurysm just then, man. Oh, my goodness. The unmitigated gall. The unmitigated gall. I didn't even know what that meant. I had to crank out my laptop and Google what in the world that meant. But, you know, you saw the displeasure that Stephen A. had last night, Isaac. And you know what got me was the shot that they had of the little kid. You see the little kid?
Oh, yeah.
Was that candid or what? They showed the kid right when the pick was made, and the kid is like crying as he's taking a picture of I guess, inside the Barclays Center, and he's just throwing his hands up. But I have to totally agree with Stephen A. Smith, Isaac. I think that, you know, having a number four pick and realizing that Justice Winslow was sitting right there, who I think is going to be, and I said this yesterday. I said I think that Justice Winslow has the potential, even though I love Karl Anthony Towns, and I think he will be the rookie of the year next year. But when it's all said and done, when we look at this class, this 2015 class, years and years from now, I do believe that the best player out this draft is going to be Justice Winslow. The kid is that good. He's a franchise changer. So why would you, if you're Phil Jackson, go with a guy who has played in Latvia, who I think, you know, when you look at international players, depending on the league they play in, you got to take that with a grain of salt in general, who is a guy who I think is going to be a solid player eventually, but who's not going to be an immediate impact guy. And you know, with the New York Knicks, there's always an expectation of win now. I did not like this pick, Isaac. And I think when you look back years from now, it's also going to be something that when you look at Phil Jackson and you're going to say, what in the world was he thinking with this pick?
Well, Al, I want to go on a little bit of a rant on my own. I don't have the anger in my heart of Stephen
A. You were high on Porzingis, yeah.
But here's the thing. All right, I want to take four steps back. First off, no, Jahlil Okafor makes zero sense for the 76ers. They have two big men already in Joel Embiid
and
Nerlens Noel, who they just drafted third and sixth overall, or traded Drew Holiday, the only all-star the team had for some time, for the sixth pick to draft Nerlens Noel. So no, guess who's on the table? There's still Emmanuel Mudiay, who's a position of need for the 76ers, somebody who can make the big men work, a point guard. So no, Jahlil Okafor, you're going to have three future franchise big men on the same team.
But you
none
know,
of them can shoot.
Yeah, and you know Sam Hinkie and the Philadelphia 76ers, they don't really care about needs. I mean, they selected what, Nerlens Noel? They selected Joel Embiid. I mean, what, 6'11", 7 foot? Now you're throwing another, you know, 6'10" guy in there. They don't care. They always draft what's best available. They've always done that.
Yeah.
And that front court the back court is hurting right now.
Oh, it's stacked, the front court, but the back court.
Right.
I mean, come recruit me if you're looking for somebody, because that's who the best they got. But then to go on to Justice Winslow. Okay, Kristaps Porzingis. Not a great pick, in my opinion. Mm-hmm. Stephen A. Smith's exactly right. Carmelo Anthony was just paid $124 million over the course of 5 years to lead this franchise into the playoffs. And they pay somebody who might not even play this year? How does that make sense? Especially since this guy, who's a better comparison than Andrea Bargnani? Really, 7-1, cannot rebound, great shot. Guess who's like that? Andrea Bargnani. Ask Knicks fans what they think about him. But Justice Winslow is not the answer. And this is my opinion. Justice Winslow is not going to be a star. He's going to be a solid NBA player, but he's not going to be a star. He's not.
You don't think Justice Winslow is going to be a star?
No, he's not going to do anything with that franchise.
I disagree.
That another player couldn't fill in into because he plays small forward. So does Carmelo Anthony. Justice Winslow needs a point guard to make things work. Right now, they have Jose Calderon as their point guard.
Right. I hear you. I hear.
Emmanuel Mudiay. Point guards are franchise changers. Small forwards very rarely are, unless it's LeBron James or Andrew Wiggins.
What I love about Justice Winslow, and this gets to I told you, I had two quarrels with the draft. It was the Knicks drafting Porzingis, and it was my Pistons. At the number 8th pick, now you Isaac, have been high on Stanley Johnson ever since we began this whole conversation with the draft, and you thought that's who they were going to get from the very get-go. Mario Hinoya, of course, what he did this past weekend, he really padded that resume, and he went early. And I thought that it was between, at the end of the day, for me, before the draft even started, it was going to be between Devin Booker and then possibly Stanley Johnson. But that was before taking into account what took place in the first 1 through 7 picks. And Justice Winslow is sitting right there, a guy who many thought was going to be that number 4 pick, the number 4 overall pick of the NBA draft, a guy who, this is why I love Justice Winslow. I've always said, with the Detroit Pistons, they are at their best in transition. When they push the basketball, it's why, after the trade with Josh Smith, they went on that 11-game win streak, is because it allowed them not to, you know, to become stagnant with the basketball. And Brandon Jennings really started to find his own in the transition game, speeding things up, getting the ball down low early, or finding a quick shot on the perimeter, which their shooting also improved with the absence of Josh Smith, who was historically, you know, one of the worst 3-point shooters in NBA history. They are at their best when they are in transition. Out of everyone in this NBA draft, Justice Winslow, Isaac, is the best player, without a doubt, in the transition game. He also provides the size, the bulkiness to it. He can finish around the rim easily. He's got a nice shot, which I think will develop over time. This was a no-brainer for me. It absolutely blew my mind how 7 teams, well, actually 9 teams at the end of the day, slept on Justice Winslow, and this is why Pat Riley knows how to win. It just happens that way sometimes. He finds the best players, and that's exactly what happened. He went for value, and he ends up with a steal at the number 10 pick for the Miami Heat, which, of course, we know how much help Dwayne Wade needs over there. It just blew my mind how Justice Winslow was sitting right there, and you didn't go after him. I don't get that.
Well, Al, like I said, Justice Winslow, I think, is going to be a good NBA player. I do. I think he's going to be a good, solid NBA player. I think he might have been the safest pick in this draft. Because I think in the middle of his career, he's got to average 15 or 16 points per game. But I don't think he's got too much more potential like that. If you're looking for a franchise-changing player, Stanley Johnson
has all
the tools.
Oh, stop it,
Stanley
Isaac.
Johnson.
Are you
He's got a
me?
Great-looking shot. Okay,
Isaac.
His defensive pairing with Rondae Hollis-Jefferson was the best in the nation,
Isaac,
when you talk about perimeter defense. And he can run the fast break. He's so athletic. He fits into the Pistons system. Now, here's why Justice Winslow will have made sense. Because the Pistons are getting rid of Greg Monroe. They got rid of Josh
Smith.
Yeah,
he's not going to be
there. They've got Ersan Ilyasova.
Right,
right.
Who's
a stretch 3, not a stretch 4. There's no way that dude should be playing the 4. Because guess what? Now the Pistons have no rebounding. Justice Winslow averages as many rebounds as Willie Cauley-Stein. That's why
right.
It makes sense. But no, Stanley Johnson fits into the 3 so much better.
Stanley Johnson is not going to be a guy to come in and be an immediate all-star. Isaac. He's not. He's going to be a guy who's going to this. I think the perception you have about Justice Winslow is the perception I have about Stanley Johnson. And Jay Billis said it when he was drafted. He said this kid is a good player, but he doesn't have that awe factor. He's a guy who's going to come in. He can defend multiple positions. He's a very good defender. I think that's the best part of his game, if you ask me. He needs to become a better shooter, which I think shooting is what this team needed also, which is why I think Devin Booker would have made more sense over Stanley Johnson in that fact. But at the end of the day, I thought, you know, when I look at the NBA draft, I think of immediate impact in drafting the best available. In my eyes, Justice Winslow was the best available player. I will say this, though. I love the interview with the kid. I mean, he came in and throughout the Detroit versus everybody rap. I really love that. He came in with a gritty attitude. He said, I think I'm going to be the best player. I'm the best player out this entire draft class. I really like that chip on the shoulder. And you saw the quote I read in our Quick Headliners. I mean, you know, Stan Van Gundy believes that he's going to embody that Detroit Bad Boys 80s attitude that they had back in the day. You know what I mean? I love that about him. But again, pump the brakes. I understand where his mindset is. I just think when we look back, Justice Winslow is going to be a star while Stanley Johnson is just going to be a really good player at the end of the day. I don't know. Let's see what the people think. 517-355-9527. 517-355-9527. Let's hit our first break, guys, and come right back. When we do come back, of course, we're going to wrap up more thoughts on an NBA draft and also Brandon Dawson being drafted in the NBA. Great call by Isaac on that one. Also, we're talking a little Tigers. And again, we're taking your calls. 517-355-9527. You are listening to Current Sports right here on WKAR AMA 70. Welcome back. You are tuned into Current Sports with me, Al Martin, right here on WKAR AMA 70. You know, I would be remiss if I did not, of course, bring up Current Sports TV. I'm pretty sure many of you guys were probably tuned into ESPN around 10 o'clock. I actually took a break from the NBA Draft Madison and watched my sit-down, of course, with Tom Saxton, who is the Michigan State head women's soccer coach. It was fantastic sitting down with Tom. He is such a great guy who also let me know that he tunes into the show as well 5 days a week. So thanks a lot, Tom, for being a dedicated listener. If you happen to miss that sit down, it's really interesting. I know, Isaac, you're a big soccer guy. And, you know, Tom talked about the possibilities for the U.S. women's national soccer team to take the World Cup. And, you know, we played highlights from the Colombia game. And, Tom really gave great analysis on, especially when it talks about the disparity between men's national soccer compared to women's national soccer, how the women's team is ranked number 2 in the world behind Germany. And if you look at the men's side, according to FIFA rankings, they're ranked 27th. And he gave a very, very good explanation as to why that is so. So if you missed any of that, just go to video.wkar.org. Check out that episode as well as any episode you have missed in current sports TV history. Well, I'll tell you what, Isaac. Again, our phone lines are open. 517-355-9527. 517-355-9527. Let's get to a few of our callers here. On line one, we've got Walt from D-Town, Detroit. Walt, how you doing? Welcome to the show. Do we have him? Is Walt there?
Says he is.
Hello, Walt. I don't think we got Walt. I don't think we have him. Let's have Walt call back then. Walt, is he there? No? Nope, I don't think he is. All right, 517-355-9527, 517-355-9527. That's the number to call. Thoughts on Brandon Dawson here, because, you know, Brandon Dawson is a guy who I didn't think was going to be drafted last night, Isaac. Of course, Michigan State star. He's very, very athletic. I think he needs to develop his offensive game a little bit more. Here's actually Brandon Dawson after finding out that he was picked in last night's second round of the NBA draft to the New Orleans Pelicans.
You know, it was exciting. Coach Johnny, stood in my face and, just to see, the fire in his eyes and, just the excitement and the joy, he started, clapping my hand and he said, it's here. And, you know, I just broke down, and I just knew it was all in God's plan, and, you know, it was in His will, and I never stopped believing, you know, never stopped praying. We pray every morning before every workout, Coach Johnny and I, and, you know, it was amazing. I mean, this was the best feeling of my life, and, you know, throughout the draft, you know, throughout both rounds, you know, my family and friends never told me, you know, stop, you know, never stop having faith. You know, it was all in God's plan. And, you know, from my workout with the Clippers, I just had that gut feeling. You know, I had a great workout with those guys. And, you know, just for them to give me, you know, an opportunity, you know, to represent, you know, their organization, you know, it's a dream come true and it's a huge blessing.
Yeah, Brandon Dawson, four-year standout at Michigan State. He went number 56 overall in the second round to the New Orleans Pelicans. Then was quickly traded to the L.A. Clippers for cash considerations. The Orange County Register actually reported the cost was about $600,000. L.A. is one of 11 teams that Dawson worked out for before the draft. How about that? You know, with your Pelicans, Isaac, drafting Brandon Dawson, and then that trade ensuing where Dawson is now going to the L.A. Clippers. You know, I'm so happy for Brandon Dawson because he's a player, at the end of the day, who is going to work his tail off to make sure that he finds some sort of success in the league. But we have seen recent Spartans, actually struggle with that in transition. I mean, Adrian Payne, a guy who I thought had tremendous upside and was going to be a force in the NBA, is really now struggling for minutes. I mean, and you talk about... You talk about the Minnesota Timberwolves, Isaac. I mean, gosh, he's going to be really struggling for minutes now with Karl-Anthony Towns now added to that front court, right?
Oh, yeah.
But my goodness. So you know, you got, you know, Adrian Payne, who played a little bit in the D-League and decided to come back. Then that trade happened with the Atlanta Hawks. He couldn't find any play in town with Atlanta because they were the best in the East, and they had, you know, guys like Al Horford just balling for that front court. So the trade happened. He goes to Minnesota. He gets more playing time there, but still really struggled to find some sort of consistency. It's going to make it even more tough now. Of course, Gary Harris, who I also thought was going to be a stud in this league, he's also been struggling and trying to find playing time with the Denver Nuggets. So we'll see. You know, Brandon Dawson coming in. The big knock on Brandon, he has to develop more of an offensive game. He's going to be an outstanding defender, but his size is also a problem. He's 6'6". Folks, that's the size of what Kobe Bryant and Michael Jordan were. They were shooting guards, okay? Brandon Dawson played forward here at Michigan State University, and his game, you know, idles more of a front court more than the back court. You know what I mean? So at the end of the day, I think Brandon Dawson is going to have to change his game a bit. I think he is, to adjust to how the NBA game and what it demands. But at the end of the day, I think his athleticism, if anything, if there is one big positivity, positive outlook on Brandon Dawson, it is the fact that he is athletic. And we've seen athletic guys find a niche in the league, but he's going to have to work hard to do that, Isaac.
And now the other thing is we've seen the league start transitioning into smaller lineups. You saw it in the finals with the Warriors sometimes using Draymond Green as a center. A smaller lineup where Brandon Dawson can play the four, he could be lethal in that.
Mm-hmm.
So that's right. What I bet the Clippers are looking for. And they've got some shooters in the backcourt. So if they can surround him with shooters, then he might be able to fit in at the three.
Yeah, that is certainly true. Again, folks, our phone lines are open. I believe we do have a caller on line one. I think we got Walt back. Walt from Detroit. Walt, how you doing? Welcome to Current Sports, my man.
What's going on? Can you hear me this time?
I can hear you. We got you, brother. We got you.
Oh, good, man. Good. Just in terms of the draft last night, that was unbelievable. With the Pistons, I just didn't know where the guy came from for drafting Stanley Johnson. I was just shocked, man. I mean, you know, over the years, you know, the Darko thing, you think we would bounce back. I just don't feel like in terms of our draft choices, man, we bounced back from that one mistake. Now, I almost feel like we're cursed to a degree. But,
right,
you know, a friend of mine did kind of enlighten me and, you know, showed me the shot analytics compared to Winslow versus Stanley, and it's kind of looking like Stanley's shot analytics is looking a lot better in his favor in terms of percentage. Now, I know you're not really as good of a finisher, but, you know, in terms of how it looks, his perimeter game is a little bit better than Winslow when it's coming to his scoring. But inside, you know, Winslow does have a better completion percentage, which is like 61% versus, I think, Stanley's 51% completion around the rim. Mm-hmm. So I don't know, man. I mean, I hope that we can all be proven wrong, you know, in the end. But you know, we just have to see, you know.
Yeah, and only time, and you know, what? When I looked at this pick, you know, it was one of those things because I would have been happy with Stanley Johnson. And I am, at the end of the day, this is a solid pick. I won't say outstanding or great or off the charts or a game-changing pick for the Detroit Pistons. But knowing that Justice Winslow was sitting right there, and the Pistons said, we'll go with Stanley Johnson. And I think the end-all be-all, I don't know if you saw this article. It was actually written. I don't know if you saw this either, Isaac. Written by the Detroit News. Friend of the show, Terry Foster, actually wrote this article. The headline is actually, quote, Justice Winslow wouldn't be down if he fell to the Pistons. And the reason Terry wrote this article, if you read it, just go to dtnews.com. He kind of highlights the individual workouts between Justice Winslow and Stanley Johnson when they both worked out for the Detroit Pistons. And I think the end-all be-all was that Stan Van Gundy, when he analyzed the attitudes of both of those players after they worked out, Justice Winslow was, you know, kind of just taking it nonchalant, like, if the Pistons draft me, they draft me. While on the other hand, Stanley Johnson, you can read some of the quotes. I mean, Stanley Johnson was all in. He said, hey, quote, if I'm there, pull the trigger on me. I want to be a Piston. It was more than just the X's and O's. It was about the intangibles and Stanley Johnson's overall emotion of possibly donning the red, white, and royal blue, Walt.
Overall, all we can say is time will tell, man. So I'm looking forward to good things from the Pistons.
Certainly.
We can get something this time.
Hey, you know what, Walt? I just realized what Walt this is. Walt, you just got married, didn't you? You just proposed, right?
Yes, sir.
Yes. I know what Walt this is now because I'm looking at my Facebook page right now and Walt wants to tune in. This is actually Walt Bivens, man. He's a fantastic, fantastic individual. Walt, actually, when I was a freshman here at Michigan State, Isaac, something called the Advantage Program they do here on campus, Walt was one of the speakers there and one of the organizers, which I still believe you still are, right, Walt?
Well, you know, I was there. I still help out from time to time, but we have another group of students that took over. I'm actually working with Eric and his company in the nonprofit. So
that's fantastic.
I kind of moved on, but I still have a presence and influence there when I can.
That's fantastic. Yeah, and Walt, you did one fantastic job when I was a student here, man. And much love to you. Hey, and hey, congratulations on the proposal, my man. That's how you do it, all right?
Oh, yeah. Yes, sir. Thanks so much. I appreciate it.
Thanks a lot, Walt. Appreciate the call, my man. All right, folks. Again, phone lines are open, 517-355-9527, 517-355-9527. We've got Apachu on line two. Apachu, how you doing, brother?
I'm doing okay. Thank you, sir.
Yeah.
You know, I saw Arizona play several times, and Johnson did not stand out. But I'm thinking the reason why he didn't stand out was because they were really building that team around there. I don't remember the big guy's name, but there was a big man there that they seemed to be building that team around. So that may have been the reason why he didn't stand out so much. But evidently, he had a pretty good scoring average. I think around 13 or 14 points.
Mm-hmm. Right.
But so we'll see. I thought maybe they should have got the tank. You know, you're losing a big man, get another big man, and it's unpredictable how good he's going to be. But they're all unpredictable, really, even the number one draft choice. You never know, man.
Right.
You got to build a team. And it's seldom that you build a team through the draft, I think. I don't know, my basketball are good. They say that's how Golden State built their team. But it took them, 4 or 5 years, 6 years to build that team through the draft.
Mm-hmm.
And you got to have some luck along the way. But I got a question about the draft. There was a kid out of Eastern that played for Providence. Hinton?
From Providence. You know who that is?
LaDante
Hinton. Hinton. Yes.
He's from Eastern, and his name was in the draft. Did anybody pick him?
I don't recall seeing his name being picked, Apachu.
But I'm looking right now, and it's being reported that actually LaDante Hinton will play summer league with the Golden State Warriors.
Okay, because he averaged 19 points a game, and he was, I think, first team all Big East,
right,
which is a pretty good accomplishment, you know.
Yeah, no, very, very true. And if you look at his career, I mean, he had a decorated career at Providence. I mean, he had more than like 2,000 points and 1,000 rebounds, and of course helped the Friars reach, I think, 2 NCAA tourneys. So, yeah, he was a very, very good player in college, Pachu.
Yeah, I think we're going to see him on an NBA team, man. That's pretty impressive. Providence got a pretty good program. The Big East, of course. It's always between the Big East and Big Ten after, in the last few years anyway, after who's the best conference. So that's a pretty good accomplishment. I wanted to get your opinion. Several years ago, Michigan played in a bowl game, and it was a Mississippi team, and I thought they officially had Confederate flags. Mm-hmm. The cheerleaders and a lot of the fans, and I think it was the Michigan game. It was some game against a Big Ten team, and they were playing Dixie. And I was going to ask your opinion. Do you think they're going to change that with all this commotion that's going on right now in South Carolina?
I have been keeping a close ear to that debate, Apachu. And, you know, it's funny because, you know, you talk about in college football in Michigan, there's also talks in the NHL. And the NHL actually came out and said, as of right now, they're not going to ban the Confederate flag from being waved at their sporting events right now. But, you know, very, very interesting stuff because, you know, this flag has been a symbol of just – and I see different campaigns nationwide. It's been a symbol of just, what's the exact word I want to say here? Of unequality, oppression. I guess you can say, or oppression in a way. You know what I mean? Depending on which certain groups used it, of course, if you know, historical significance, the Ku Klux Klan, even though it wasn't their official flag, it's a flag that they would wave, you know, from time to time back in the 60s when race and war riots were real big back in that day. And, you know, it's one of those symbols that when you look at it, it makes a lot of people uneasy. And I really think I'm for it. You know, if a lot of people are rubbed the wrong way about it, you know, a lot of my family members, when they see the Confederate flag, they're like, oh, my goodness, that so immediate thoughts come to their head. If that is something that really has taken headway around the sporting realm, I don't think it should be allowed at sporting events then.
Years ago, Mississippi was having trouble recruiting black players, mm-hmm. and it was because of their legacy and slavery and so forth. And then they overcame that, and I don't know if that's the one that still has that flag. But I find it interesting. If I'm a recruiter and I want to badmouth a team or a school that has that flag, I would use that flag against them. If I'm talking to a black athlete, I would make a point to let them know that they have that flag. Is that something they want? Is that an environment they want to live around and so forth?
Uh-huh.
You know, but I just wanted to get your opinion on that. And on that kid, I was hoping that he made it to the draft. He's going to be playing summer league. I'm going to keep an eye on that on TV there. Thanks a lot, guys. Good topic.
Sarly, hey, thanks a lot. Always a great call, Apache. Appreciate it, my man. And, yeah, I that's something that you know, I don't know if you saw that story, Isaac, but, you know, the NHL has said, you know, as of right now, you know, there's still some steps to be made when it comes to the discussion of that flag. But, again, it's one of those symbols of hate, really, at the end of the day. I mean, the Confederate flag, I know when I was growing up, I mean, my pops would say, oh, yeah, the Confederate flag, and he gave me, like, a kind of a very vague history of it, which I barely remember that conversation now. But I always remember looking at the Confederate flag and remembering that conversation I had with my father, and now, you know, it's being represented as sort of a symbol of I guess you can say again inequality and hate at the end of the day. I don't know if that's a strong word to use, but it is.
Al, I'm from the South. I am from New Orleans, heart of the South.
Right.
And I can tell you, first off, to all our listeners who are interested in knowing about Mississippi, and I'd be interested to hear if this was actually the Mississippi state flag mm-hmm. or the Confederate flag that was being waved at the Ole Miss games, because they're virtually indistinguishable.
They look very much alike.
Oh, yeah. It's insane. So, yeah, it's a sign of hate. It's a sign of oppression. People say it's a sign of culture. No, it's not. It's a sign of a slave-based society that wanted to separate itself from the Union. What type of culture is that?
Mm-hmm. Right.
You know, that's not a sign of culture. And name, every time I see a Confederate flag flying in the South, you don't think, oh, there's somebody who's proud of his family's heritage. No, you think, I wouldn't feel safe knocking on that house if I was an African American. I know I think that. I've talked about not bringing certain of my friends to certain parts of Mississippi for canoeing trips. It's still a very omnipresent threat in the South. There's racism, and the Confederate flag just perpetuates that. It needs to be taken down. It needs to be banished. And sports are a great place to start.
I'm right there with you, Isaac. Very eloquently said, my friend. Let's hit our second break. When we come back, again, we're still taking your calls. 517-355-9527, 517-355-9527. We'll play a Flashback Friday chat with Sally Nogle, head athletic trainer, who has been dying with a pretty cool honor you want to hear about. We'll also have Reflection Friday and so much more. Don't touch that dial. You are listening to Current Sports right here on WKAR AMA 70. Welcome back to WKAR's Current Sports. We have a brief Flashback Friday interview for you in honor of an individual who has certainly made her stamp here in mid-Michigan at Michigan State University. You can add the Tim Caron Award to the long list of recognition for Michigan State head athletic trainer Sally Nogle. Nogle received the award given to one individual each year for outstanding service as an athletic trainer. Yesterday in St. Louis at the National Athletic Trainers Association's National Convention. Now, it has been awarded in the name of Caron, the late longtime University of Tennessee trainer since 1994, who died suddenly from an aortic aneurysm in 1992. What an honor, though. Sally Nogle receiving this award. And, you know, let's take a trip back in time, actually, to last year when I got a chance on Current Sports TV to sit down with Sally. As she talked about her remarkable career, as well as how she entered the world of athletic training.
Well, I went to college at San Diego State University, and I was playing sports. I was playing volleyball and basketball, and we had an athletic trainer. And I got hurt, ironically a concussion, and I met the athletic trainer that way. And that's how I found out about the profession. I was looking for something in the healthcare area, and so it worked out really well.
Now for you, I mean, going back in time, when you first started, The profession of athletic training overall has grown as far as women goes over the years. But I'm sure back in your day, what I've read, it was at a point where you didn't see too many women athletic trainers. I mean, talk about that field and how it's kind of growing over time when it comes to women.
The whole profession of athletic training has grown. It started in 1950. The numbers have increased from, you know, a few thousand to now to 30,000 athletic trainers. And the female percentage went from a low percentage, maybe 20-30%, to now we're 50%. So they're working in all fields of athletic training. It's still limited in the college setting, and especially at the Division I setting. Mm-hmm. But the profession has grown a lot.
For you, why do you think it's grown over time, year after year?
I think that sports, especially like Title IX, has helped with women's sports being added. More sports, just whole sports evolution of the whole country. We like sports better. We have more, you know, teams. We're hiring athletic trainers to help those teams, and so that's been a positive for us.
Now for you, Sally, a pretty cool story. You know, when I was doing my research, doing my homework, when you came here and trying and getting your feet wet in athletic training at MSU, George Perlis, of course, head football coach at MSU during that time, and he didn't really give you a shot at first, but eventually did. I mean, talk about that. I mean, trying to earn your way as far as the football aspect of things. I mean, getting on the field and being that athletic trainer.
Yes, when I first arrived here, I had worked football and men's basketball at San Diego State. So when I came here, I thought, when I said they're working football, women's basketball, I thought, okay, that sounds good. And then I got here, and George had never worked with women before. He'd come from college when there was no women athletic trainers or even women around, and then the pros. He was with the Steelers for many years. And so I got here, and he said, well, you can work with our team, but you cannot go on the field. And I was like, what? I mean, how do you do that? You just stay in the training room and take care of them in there when they come in, and I was like, okay, that I'm not trying to last here long. 30 years later, I'm still here.
Right,
but as time
right.
went on, he realized that it's, you know, I'm an athletic trainer, and it didn't matter if I was female or male. And so because of that, he eventually said, actually, one woman could go on the field, meaning me. But I said, okay, and I sent a student out. And he asked me, what are you doing? I said, you said one woman. You didn't say Sally. And so I started wanting the students to get the experience because I'd already had it, and I wanted them to get it. And then, you know, next year or two, it took a couple years, he finally started realizing it didn't matter. And we could have female students out there, and he accepted me as an athletic trainer, and it was great.
When at first George didn't let you go out on the field, I mean, was that discouraging for you at all? I mean, and how did you deal with that?
It was very discouraging. I was shocked because I hadn't experienced that, and I didn't understand why, because I was an athletic trainer. It wasn't a problem working with males for me, so I didn't understand it. But he used to have a saying, you know, work hard, keep your mouth shut, and good things will happen. And I thought, well, I'm going to try that. And to be honest, if it didn't work, I probably would have left. But it worked.
It worked out.
Yeah.
There you have that. Sally Nogle. Again, that was around, man, one of our earlier episodes in current sports TV history. Again, I just wanted to take a look at that interview because, you know, Sally hits on a bunch of things there when it talks about gender relations in the world of athletic training. But again, she has won the Tim Caron Award. How about that for her outstanding service as an athletic trainer? That award is given to just one individual each year at the National Athletic Trainers Association's National Convention. So she was the honoree. Unbelievable stuff. Congrats to Sally Nogle. Well, it is Friday, and each and every Friday here on Current Sports, we bleed out the show and say goodbye to you all by taking a look at the week that was here on Current Sports and bringing you our favorite stories, segments, even some stories that we may not have gotten to. So here we go. Time for Reflection Friday. All right, well, Isaac, you want to start us off? Because I think you have an interesting story concerning Phil Jackson and his tutelage as a executive. It's pretty comical,
Wow. Yeah, I'm going to need some time to laugh on the air because this is hysterical. Phil Jackson said in an interview that he was surprised that he didn't receive any Executive of the Year votes last year. I mean, I'm cracking up here. The dude, it's...
Like, come on, man.
They had one of the worst records in the league, and they had Carmelo Anthony. They ditched J.R. Smith and Iman Shumpert for nobody. It's horrible, just general managing decisions. I can't talk about it anymore. I need to laugh. Go ahead.
I feel you, brother. But first off, I want to acknowledge the, you know, going away from sports, just the landmark week this has been in the U.S. of A. I don't know if you saw this morning, but it was a voted upon 5-4 decision by the Supreme Court. Gay marriage is now legal here in all 50 states. How about that? A landmark decision. President Obama came out to the podium and voiced his thoughts on that. Also, Obamacare is in the books now. Really a historical moment for that as well. And also, right now, man, sad news, of course, with the shootings out in Charleston, South Carolina, and the, you know, where the you know, kid just goes in and just, you know, kills 9 people. Inside of a church. Right now, the funeral of the pastor is going on right now, and President Obama is expected to give the eulogy. They have that streaming everywhere. So just an unbelievable week in our nation here. But also, to close up my Reflection Friday here, Isaac, check out this. This is actually a breaking news story that actually broke 32 minutes ago. Defensive lineman Andre Pipkins, told ESPN that Michigan head coach Jim Harbaugh, head athletic trainer Paul Schmidt, and associate athletic director Jim Minnick asked him about 10 times over a 2-month period to sign a medical scholarship form that would have ended his career with the Wolverines before he wanted to. He says, quote, I'm healthy and ready to play, said Kipkins, who played last season and was cleared to return from the torn knee ligament. Quote, I don't want to sign the form. I wanted to play for my seniors and for the team. Coach Harbaugh said, I recommend you take the medical. Wow, Pipkin said he felt constant pressure to retire. You better believe this story is going to be talked about for some days, especially right here in Michigan. Well, that wraps up Reflection Friday, and that puts a bow on this week's Current Sports. I want to give a big shout-out to all of you for tuning in to today's Current Sports with me, Al Martin, right here on WKAR AM 870 East Lansing. Take care, have one fantastic weekend, and be easy, people.